Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts, typically with a focus on Kenpo, but this is what I consider one of the bonus episodes, so we are going to chat with our wonderful, wonderful guest here, Samantha Mittling, and yeah, we're going to just get into it and have some chat in here. So how I usually start things off is I just kind of give a rundown of my background. So I started I've always been a big fan of the martial arts and, you know, grew up watching the Kung Fu movies and Bruce Lee movies and Jackie Chan and all those good stuff, back in the day. Fast forward to, the early mid 90s, I saw the movie The Perfect Weapon featuring Jeff Speakman, and that started my love for Kenpo, and jumped right into that and got to train for a few years, 2 or 3 years doing that. One in 96, I left for the Army, and while I was in the Army, I got to do a little bit of Taekwondo, a little bit of Hapkido, and a little bit of boxing. Enjoyed that, and did that for a while I was in. When I got out, I didn't find a school that really kind of worked for me. I'm originally from the San Diego, California area, and after I got out of the military, I moved to the Dallas, Texas area. And I just kind of, you know, did my own thing, kind of tried to remember the various techniques and forms and things that I had learned previously, and kind of did my own thing until I found a school for capoeira, and I got involved in capoeira and have been doing that coming up on 17 years now. And just, you know, really, really enjoying that, even though my body can't always handle handle everything that is required. But, you know, we make it work. I always, you know, kept my love for Kenpo, and found a school about 2 or 3 years ago, and got back into that. And you know, had to do the journey of starting over as a white belt, which you know, at first was not great. I didn't love it, but I'm glad that I did, you know, had to go through that and working my way back up, and just enjoying that. So that's, you know, kind of my story and sticking to it, and we'll kind of get into some other things as we go along. But yeah, I'm gonna turn it over to our esteemed guest. And I would say first, since my listeners may not be familiar with you and your accomplishments, so yeah, if you could kind of just, I guess, start with, you know, kind of what you're known for, and then yeah, we'll get into your journey and how you got involved in the arts. So go ahead and take it away.
I'm Samantha. I'm 19, and I started martial arts when I was 5 years old. I am known for the bo staff, which is this long stick, and that is what I do most of now. I do have a 4-3 black belt in karate, but my focus over the years has shifted to competing. So I travel all over the North America, and I compete at tournaments once to twice a month, and I compete with the bo staff. I am a multi-time world champion martial artist with the bo staff as well. And that's really my background with martial arts.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, as far as the style, the specific style that you train in is
karate is what my background is with my black belt.
So like a freestyle karate or
essentially, know, yeah, it's karate. It's like a hybrid between karate and Taekwondo. So we have little elements of Taekwondo. Taekwondo is very like kick heavy. We mm-hmm. don't we're not as kick heavy as like traditional Taekwondo schools, but we do have those elements into what we do. So with the punches and kicks and blocks and everything like that.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you got started super young. How, you know, what was the catalyst for that? You know, were your parents, you know, martial artists and said you got to do it, or kind of what got started there?
Yeah. So my dad, this actually wasn't the reason why I started, but my dad got up to red belt when he did karate, but karate was just so different back then than it is now. Back then he was a kid, but it was mostly adults at the time. So for him as a kid, it just wasn't very fun with all those adults. But I actually got into it because there was a kid in my preschool class that went to the karate school that I end up going to now. And he would always talk about how fun it was and everything, and just always talked about karate. So I had gone home and told my parents, like, hey, I want to do karate. And I had a bunch of interests and passions at the time. So they were like, let's give it 6 months. She's probably going to forget about it and not be asking about it. She'll want to do dance or something like that. But I was still asking about it 6 months later. So we ended up looking for some karate schools. And then we found a karate school, did my intro lesson, absolutely loved it. I guess I said that I wanted to be a black belt right then. And 13 years later, I still go to the same school.
That is fantastic. I can definitely relate to the, you know, young person wanting to do all these kind of different things. My nephew did Taekwondo for a little bit, but then decided, oh no, I want to do this. And kind of every other day it's, oh, I want to do this instead. I want to do this instead. So, you know, to be young and wanting to stick with it is huge. So, you know, kudos to you for sticking with it.
Thank you.
So when did the competition part of your training start?
Yeah, so I started competing actually when I was six. So I was a little dragon, like green stripe or blue stripe. And I competed at my first tournament and I loved it. I always loved performing. And that's essentially what you do with competing. You get to perform in front of other people. And I love that. And ever since then, like I kept on competing. When I was 12 years old, I started to compete nationally. So we went to Chicago, Atlanta, Philadelphia, tried some tournaments there, absolutely loved it. And then the following year, when I was 13, I started to compete consistently the whole circuit, which is NASCA, what I compete on, the North American Sport Karate Association. And I've been doing that now for 5 years.
Fantastic. Now, is it just you know, weapons forms, or do you do sparring or any other divisions, or?
So I just do weapons. I've never actually competed in sparring. Sparring is not my thing at all. I used to do forms. I used to do, do you know, are you familiar with Gae Baek? It's like a Korean kata.
It sounds kind of familiar, but not super, super familiar with it. But
okay, I believe, yeah, I've heard for that the name. For the listeners that have done like a Korean style form, they'll probably know what that one is. I used to compete with that and then some other like empty hand creative forms, but now I just stick to weapons. It's just easier when you're trying to train at a high level to compete. It's easier to be able to focus on one like specific thing instead of multiple things, is what I found out.
And your weapon of choice is the bow. Are there any other weapons that you compete with or that you like or?
Yeah, so I only compete with the bow, but actually before I got started doing bow, I thought that I was going to be into nunchucks, that nunchucks was going to be my weapon of choice, because one of my biggest inspirations, if you guys know Sammy Smith, she did nunchucks, and because of that, I was like, oh, I want to do nunchucks. And then with how our curriculum works, we learn bow first, so I learned bow and ended up falling in love with that. But I can do nunchucks, commas, and sword. I do know how to do all three of those. Nunchucks is probably my second best weapon.
Yeah, okay. Right on, right on. I like that. Yeah, I've always, I mean, you know, the bow, the staff, you know, has always been one of my favorites. So that's, I definitely am nowhere near your skill level. So, you know, for the listeners, I will, you know, put some links to your YouTube videos, and they can just see the amazing work that you're doing there. So,
thank you.
Yeah, I've definitely, you know, the bow is my weapon of choice. Although I haven't done much as of lately. Certainly, I'm kind of on the, I guess, sort of opposite side on the competing. I actually have not done much competing myself. I mean, really, okay. Only a handful of tournaments, and never for, you know, forms or weapons. I did the sparring side of it.
Okay.
Never got any got any good at it. I kept getting disqualified. So that was
disqualified.
Well, kind of my thing was doing kind of the back knuckle reverse punch kind of combination. A lot of tournaments, a lot of the open tournaments, you know, head contact or at least hands to the head were not allowed. So, and I would keep forgetting that because I, you know, would be used to just kind of our in-house, you know, our in-house tournaments or in-house sparring class. So, you know, you kind of do what you know, and you know, I can throw the back knuckle and the reverse punch pretty easy. So I would just do that, and it's like, oh, you can't back knuckle a person in the face. And it's like, well, why not? This is martial arts. That's kind of the thing. But
what you'd have to do in the real world, like if somebody attacked you, that would be a good attack way to defend yourself. But
exactly,
I get that.
Exactly. So yeah, I got disqualified a lot, and I just was like, I guess this isn't really for me. I spectated a lot of them, you know, to cheer on my buddies and whatnot, but the competing part of it wasn't really my deal. I kind of toy with the idea of maybe getting back into it a little bit, at least to do the forms part of it.
Yeah.
Just so that I can say that I've done it, but I don't know if that's really the life for me anymore. Competing gotta leave to the young folk, so they can do all of that good stuff. So
right, and I mean, competing isn't for everybody. I mean, there's a lot of people in my karate school that have been doing martial arts for a long time, but have never, or they tried a couple tournaments and it just wasn't for them. And that's okay. Also, how you had mentioned about how you did sparring, I actually was the opposite, like you said, and I've never done sparring. Sparring has never been my thing. I actually am a punching bag when it comes to sparring, so that's why I never competed with it. Also had some injuries with it too, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can see it. That's just, you know, not your thing, and that's mm-hmm. fine. That's fine. And thanks. You know, maybe it'll change down the road. So
we'll see.
So yeah. So with all of, you know, the competing, so I know from a lot of those tournaments, you know, of course I'm gonna, you know, date myself, but you know, a lot of the competing led to a lot of martial artists get on the show WMAC Masters. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but
that was a show
out in the 90s that, you know, featured many of the, you know, martial artists that were competing. And, you know, a lot of the, you know, Hollywood folks were kind of discovered due to the competition. So, you know, since you've done a lot of the competing and doing really, really well in that, has there been any desire to get into, you know, the acting or, you know, stunt work or anything like that? Or have you been approached for anything like that?
Yeah, so that's something that I've always wanted to do with doing stuff in that industry with like stunts and acting and everything like that. I haven't done any projects yet. There are some stuff that may be coming up within the next couple of years that I can't talk about, but that'll be exciting. But also, this isn't really stunts, but back in 2021, I was approached by a broadcasting company or producing company to be on a game show in France. So this was called Game of Talents France. And essentially, what I did was I performed my bow routine. But how the show worked was that there was a set of celebrities, and I would come out on stage looking the complete opposite of a martial artist. The goal was to kind of like decoy them in a way so they wouldn't think that was my actual talent. So I came out with like this cute little skirt and just trying to look really innocent and young and everything. And they had to try to guess my talent. They didn't guess it, came back out on stage, and I did a Kill Bill inspired performance for bo staff. So that's really my like film, I guess, my film. What's the word for that? Experience with that.
Gotcha. So, I mean, were you super nervous about the, or I should say, being on kind of the stage is, you super nervous, or you kind of feel like you're, a natural for that, or how did.
Yeah, so I definitely felt nervous because this was a brand new experience for me. And also, it all happened really fast. Like, they had approached me a month before, and then all of this just happened super fast. It was also a little bit more, I feel like it made me a little bit more nervous because it's in France and people were speaking French. And they had also wanted me to speak in French. That didn't end up happening. I guess they didn't do a good enough job with my French. So they were like, nope, just kidding, you're not doing that. But that also made me a little bit nervous too, because again, like this was a new experience, but then on top of that, like with the language, like new language and everything, that made it even more, made me feel more nervous. But the performing was fun. I had a really fun time with the host. He actually had a baton twirling background. So after I did my performance, he came out on stage and he did a little bit with his baton and tried to kind of like imitate me with the yells and everything like that. And it was really fun.
Very nice. Very nice. So with the, with the all of the competing, what is your kind of training regimen like, and how does that kind of contrast with training for a competition versus just training the art as normal? Is there like a separation for that, or do you kind of say, okay, Monday and Tuesday I'm competition training, and Wednesday, Thursday I'm self-defense training, or kind of how does that break down, or.
Yeah. So I would say most of the training that I do, like solo training, is competition training. So getting ready for my performances with the bow and everything like that. The martial arts, like karate training that I do through my school, is mostly through teaching. So I guess like when I teach, that's when I'm doing like the self-defense training and everything like that. But with the competition training, it's a lot of like getting endurance up, like working on endurance and stamina, because that's really important at the high level that we do our stuff at, and just working on technique. So making sure that lines are looking clean with the strikes and stances are good, strikes are solid. There's also a bunch of strength training that goes with that as well. So going to the gym, lifting weights, resistance band training, stuff like that. So it's very, there's a lot of different elements that goes into the competition training. And then, like I had said, for the training more for my art, I do that more so because I teach so much. I do that more so with my teaching. Those kind of go together. That's when I do that, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. So with the competition side of it, are you are you creating your own forms, or are there kind of set ones, or how does that work?
Yeah, so I actually have a coach that helps me out with this. Now that I'm older and more experienced, I am able to come up with more choreography myself and just more use him to kind of get his ideas as well and just get his thoughts on like if this looks good. But before it was very much like I would have a coach that would make my entire routines for me. But now I'm able to kind of create that myself. And it's a really fun process. I kind of describe it as like you're making a puzzle because you have these different parts that you want to integrate into your form, but you have to figure out how to do so in a way where they all fit together. So it can be really difficult at times, but it's a lot of fun, the whole process with being creative.
Mm-hmm. Now, you always compete in, I'm not even sure what the term, I guess, you know, creative forms or extreme forms or
there you go.
Are there like do you do like traditional forms at all or they're all kind of.
So there's in the NASCA, which is NASCA Sport Karate, which is the circuit that I compete in. The terminology for like the flashy stuff is called CMX. So the C stands for creative. The M is musical. The X is extreme. So how those kind of work with creative, the difference between creative and extreme. Extreme, you have to be inverted and do some kind of flip. So I do an aerial, which is a no-handed cartwheel, essentially. And then in creative, it's more focused on like the weapons work. And you're not allowed to do any of the like flipping, tricking, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Musical, you get to do your routine and you have to choreograph it to music. So that's my favorite division. That's a lot of fun. And I also do traditional weapons. So that one is focused on basics. There isn't the flashy stuff. It's just doing the strikes and showing off those strong stances. And I do those divisions.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. And what song do you use? Or is it like a custom mix? Or
Yeah. So how that works is most people, they actually pick a song that they really like, and then they send it into a sport karate music DJ, and they'll add beats to it to make it align with the form. So currently right now I use Scream by Usher, but for the longest time, my signature song was the Soulja Boy song.
Oh, gotcha.
So I use that with my performance, and it's just really cool to kind of see like, even though it's not a song that you would expect for a martial arts routine, sport karate, but the different beats and stuff that they can put into it to make it sound more intense to align with your form. It's really interesting, that whole process.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. In my days coming up, the first Mortal Kombat movie came out, and everybody was using the little, you know, Mortal Kombat, you know, techno song. I'm not going to try and sing it right now, and I can't play it because it'll probably get a rights issue. So, but I think most people know the song, but felt like kind of everybody was trying to use that one, and it's like it's a little on the nose, but always got us hyped up, and once again showing my age, but our school. We went the opening night at midnight when that first Mortal Kombat movie came out, and it's just pretty much a theater full of karate folks screaming at the screen every time a particular character would come up. It was pretty funny. So excited to enjoy that, and hopefully fingers crossed. I did reach out to Chris Casamassa, who played Scorpion in that movie, and he has agreed to be on. So hopefully I'll get him on soon. But we just got to get that scheduled. But I'm looking forward to getting some of those kind of folks on there. Also spoken with Daryl Vidal, who was he was in the first original Karate Kid movie, and
what part did he play in it?
So he was the character when they got to the finals. He was the guy that was doing all the kicks in the finals.
Okay.
And he also was the man that you know, doubled for Miyagi when Miyagi was doing the kick on the pier. That was him, you know, of course bundled up, but yeah, he was the guy that was doing that. And so yeah, hoping to get him on soon. Yeah, I've been fortunate that I've gotten to speak with some pretty important folks, not just in the Kenpo world, but talked to a few actors and such as well. So I'm excited to, nice. To get those on and get some people, and glad to have you on. So when you make it big, or I should say when you make it bigger, then you can go, yeah, hey, I was on that guy's show, you know. So.
Yeah, thank you. It's nice, yeah. Too, like you said, too, even though like your podcast is mostly like focusing on Kenpo, it is kind of nice too to get these different styles and everything and just kind of get a variety and hear people like different martial arts backgrounds and how they got into it and how like their training may differ from somebody else's style. So it's all really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So with my training, I, you know, while I was doing, or I should say, I still do capoeira, but in my years of experience, I taught capoeira and still try to teach capoeira where I can now. So I'm used to that part of it, but I've recently started the instructor's program at my Kenpo school. And so with my guest, I've started asking them, you know, since you are also doing the teaching, can you maybe talk about one, kind of your early experiences in teaching, and then just, you know, maybe some advice for someone like me that's getting into teaching, and just kind of some of your observations and advice on that.
For sure. Yeah. I love teaching. I'm just going to start off by saying that I love teaching, and I feel like when you teach, in a way, you learn more than you did when you were a student, because at least that's how I feel. Because when you teach, you have to be, you kind of gain another perspective, because you need to be able to understand the skills to a certain point where you're able to teach other people how to do it. So you have to get like a deep understanding of the technique or whatever it is. But I started helping out like with assisting classes when I was 9. All I really did was just hold pads for people. Like if they were practicing their kicks, like that's pretty much all I did. But I really loved it. I would give them tips and everything like that. And I just was a volunteer for six years. I started like becoming a paid staff member when I was 15. And I loved it, right? Like, I love that I'm able to have an influence in the students' lives and be able to watch them like accomplish their goals and help give them the tools to help them succeed and accomplish those things. So that's my favorite part of teaching. I would say for people who are wanting to get into teaching, some advice that I would have is just, especially if you're younger, at first you may not always feel like you're being listened to and that you are being respected, because when you're younger and newer, like sometimes you just don't get respected as much. That's just how that works. But to just like be confident in what you're doing. And I would say looking for details is always super important. Like when you're teaching, pay attention to those little details. And then if there are things that you can also take from your karate instructors and senseis, so different ways that you liked how they taught you, combine those all together and have that be your teaching style. The things like that it. You like from how others have taught you. That's kind of my advice with that.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, attention to detail is mm-hmm. is huge. So, yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that.
Details make a big difference, even if it's just like how somebody's foot is positioned, or maybe on like a side kick chamber, like making sure that they get their knee in all the way, or they pull back their toes all the way to hit with the heel. Like, they may be little things, but they do make a big difference with that.
Mm-hmm. Have you found that the competing has helped you with teaching and vice versa? Have there been items that have cross-pollinated and kind of helped each other? Or?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. So I'm a karate school instructor, but I'm also a coach. So I coach athletes that compete in the same circuit that I do. And I feel like being a competitor has really helped with that, because I've had my fair share of experiences with not great coaching. And I know also from a competitor's like standpoint, like what things that I needed to help myself be successful. And I'm able to do that with my students. So I feel like with my experiences with that, I'm able to help give them a better experience. I know like for myself, what things worked for me. I know that I was one that obviously needed criticism, because that's how you get better. But I also occasionally like needed a reminder that, hey, you're doing good. Like, this is looking good. You're getting better. So I try to do that with my students too. And just with being patient with them. And those are things that have helped me as a competitor. So I'm able to kind of give that back to them with my coaching and teaching.
Excellent. I like it. So, you're probably, you're probably the youngest person that has been on my show so far. So,
I get that a lot.
good to be young. How I miss it, but, So I'm curious to get your perspective on, so when I was coming up, and many of the people that are probably listening, we got our start from things like, the original Karate Kid, and there is, the society was a very, very different place, 10, 20 plus years ago. And so now with kind of, with people, especially young people, which older people are guilty of this too. So I'm not going to try and come down on the young folks, but there's more of a, people are kind of just focused on themselves and not really into kind of interacting with other people and being social with other people. And I'm curious as to your perspective on how young people see the martial arts now, and also kind of with the advent of the MMA, and there's, more of this focus on, getting the attention over being involved in the art. And is there kind of a general interest, appreciation for the martial arts now? Is it difficult to kind of get the young people in and keep them in? And get them interested on the, not just being able to fight or do flips or things like that, so they can, get on YouTube and get millions of views, that sort of thing. Like, is there still a sense of people want to get the discipline and, the grit and those kind of core values, kind of what is the landscape like for young people coming up now?
Yeah. So if I'm understanding your question correctly, I've definitely noticed a shift from from when I started martial arts to now with some of the younger students who are coming in. Just even like respect wise, like they don't have the same respect for the the art and with the instructors. And I feel like I kind of feel like personally sometimes that a lot of our students that we have and younger people doing karate, a lot of it is their parents wanting them to do karate to learn self-defense, but not the kid actually wanting to do it. And that makes it tougher because they don't have that like appreciation for the art. So then they don't try as hard. And when you had mentioned too about like people wanting to do placing more value on like with the social media and getting tons of views instead of like the actual art, I can definitely see that too. I've definitely seen that with some people too, with the rise of social media and our younger martial artists. But it is really interesting, just that shift with not appreciating the art as much. And I feel like if part of that too just might be with how society has changed. But I feel like definitely like with the lack of respect and just not understanding the value, and like with martial arts too, even like not taking things seriously. We teach martial arts to, part of the reason is to defend yourself in the real world. And not a lot of them understand that. They don't take it seriously, the younger ones, compared to some of our like older adults. And I've definitely noticed that too. That's tough to watch as an instructor and just with doing karate for as long as I have. Did that answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was spot on.
Okay.
Once again, sorry for the listeners if they're hearing my dog. I thought we were going to make it all the way through, but we'll power through. So what would you have any kind of advice for, what would be maybe kind of some tips on how us, you know, instructors, older folks, how we can maybe better connect, better understand, kind of bridge the gap between, you know, the young students and what kind of things do you see that maybe might help, that maybe are there things that we're just not getting? I look at my nephews and there's a lot of times it's like, I don't understand your thought process. And I don't know, maybe is there something you could kind of help us out with? I know it's kind of a weird question, but I don't know, just what are kind of your thoughts of maybe how we can connect better with the adults and the children? And
I'm younger than you guys. I'm 19, but there are definitely, like, when I'm teaching classes, there are a bunch of times where I'm just like, I do not understand where you're coming from with this and what's exactly going through your brain and how you're processing this stuff and why you think this way. Like, I kind of am the same way a little bit. When you mean by, like, connecting with the younger students, do you mean in the way of, like, their lack of value or just, like, for the art, or what do you kind of mean by that?
I would say, you know, how, you know, yeah, getting that respect part of it. So like when I came up, you know, it didn't matter who the adult was. If you saw an adult, you know, you showed them respect, and I mean, you essentially feared. I wouldn't advocate, you know, having young people be afraid of adults, but there's definitely a sense now where it's just like, oh, well, you know, you can't, you know, you're not my supervisor. You can't, you can't tell me what to do. And, I'm not sure where that disconnect of, you know, like this is an adult. They've, even if they're, you know, they're not your parents or, you know, not your teachers or whatever, they at least have some experience. They have experience about life. And I feel like young people now are not interested, are just that that has no currency to them. They're not interested in that at all. And it's just, you know, I know it all. And, you know, when I was young, you know, I thought I knew more than I did too. And I wonder what it is that, you know, we need to do to maybe give that person an idea of, you know, hey, you should kind of listen. You should listen, and you should get some respect and mm-hmm. be open to hearing, you know, advice and information. So, is yeah. there things that that we could do that may help open up those lines of communication, maybe?
Yeah, it is so tough with some of these kids. They just don't understand that. And when you had mentioned about how when you were younger, being in a way like afraid of the adults, like I was the same exact way. When our grandmaster instructor would walk out on the floor, it was like lips were sealed. Like we knew that we needed to focus and get back to work because we respected him. But like I kind of see now sometimes too, where like the grandmaster will walk in and like that doesn't happen. As in respect wise for the adults and being able for the students to be able to kind of like respect their knowledge and their skill. Something that I've kind of learned a little bit, and some of my coworkers do this as well, they're older than me. If a kid starts not like appreciating our knowledge and understanding like that we've been doing this in our experience and everything, we will actually do the stuff with them. So let's say like they'll start saying like, oh, well, you don't know this. Like why would you know this? We will start doing the movements or warm up activities, whatever it is with them. And then when they see us doing that and seeing how well we are able to do that, then it's like their lips are sealed. And then they're like, oh, okay. So they do know what they're talking about. So sometimes like showing and being an example, just so they can see it, because sometimes like if they are able to visually see it, then they're able to understand a bit more instead of us just saying like, well, yeah, I've been doing martial arts for 13 years. I'm a fourth grade black belt. They need to actually see us doing it. And then it helps them gain that level of respect of it. That's from my experience, what I've noticed.
Very good. And I like it. All right. So we're going to move into our lightning round here as we close in on finishing out today. So first question would be, do you have a favorite technique? Now, to just kind of give some context in the Kenpo world, you know, we have things broken down and where we have our basics and, you know, your kicks and punches, your normal kicks and punches. And then we have mm-hmm. our self-defense techniques. And those are kind of specifically, I guess, for lack of a better term, you know, choreographed blueprints of, okay, there's this kind of attack coming and this is the defense of it. Then we have, you know, our forms and so forth. But so, usually when I ask this question, I'm kind of referring specifically to the self-defense techniques, but I will go ahead and open this to kind of anything, like, you know, kind of what is, what would maybe be a kind of a favorite, you know, martial arts movement or, you know, a kick or a punch or something like that.
Yeah, for sure. I can give you one for self-defense and one for like a martial arts movement. I would say that my favorite self-defense technique is when somebody goes and grabs you in a full Nelson where you wrap the arms up and are behind the neck. I mm-hmm. really like the self-defense technique that we do with that, where we drop our arms down, then we step to the side, we get them behind us, and then from there we can sweep their leg and flip them over. That's probably one of my favorite techniques for self-defense. For like a martial arts movement, I really like jump spin kicks. So like jump spin back kick, jump spin hook kick, jump spin heel kick, which is where you keep your leg straight the whole time instead of mm-hmm. a chamber and rechamber for mm-hmm. like a hook kick. Mm-hmm. Those are probably my favorite like martial arts kick technique.
Very nice. I like it. I like it. Yeah, I'm big fan of the spinning hook kick and the
Oh
jump spinning
yes.
hook kick.
Get a lot of power with it.
Yeah. Haven't done one in a while, so I'm gonna need to do that. Gonna need to
Yeah.
stretch liberally first, and then
I feel you on that.
get into that.
Yep.
Do you have a favorite form? And this, I guess, the listeners are probably gonna need to do some homework if you mention the name of a traditional Taekwondo or karate form. But just do you have like a favorite form?
Yeah, I would say that my favorite, like, traditional karate form is probably Gaebaek, which I was explaining a little bit earlier. With Gaebaek, you can look it up. It's a pretty universal Korean form. And you just really get to show off your kicks and your stances. And I really like that. It's a slower, like, tempo form. So it allows you to just really show off those stances, and then with those double kicks, with really showing off being able to stick those kicks and having those beautiful chambers and rechambers. So if you look up Gaebaek on YouTube, then you'll be able to know what I'm talking about.
Okay, right on. I like it. Okay, and then our final question: if there's anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be?
Oh. That's a really good question. I'm gonna have to say Bruce Lee. I feel like a lot of people may say the same thing, but I'm gonna have to say Bruce Lee. Just
Very nice.
he was incredible with his skills and would love to train with him.
Excellent, excellent. I like it. Well, yeah, I thank you so much for being on with me here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad that you agreed to be on, and I enjoyed hearing your story, and we'll definitely have to do this again sometime.
For sure.
So now is your time for shameless self-promotion, so you can plug anything you want or say anything that maybe we didn't cover that you wanted to get out there. Now is your time to have the floor here. So go ahead.
Okay. I think I pretty much covered everything with my accomplishments and everything like that. But if the listeners are wanting to follow along more with my journey, they can find me on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, Samantha Mittling, and you can keep up with my journey there.
All right, awesome. Yeah, I will put all the links to all your stuff and let everyone marvel at your amazing skill. And
Thank
yeah,
you.
I'm looking forward to seeing what you accomplish next. So thank you again
Yeah.
for being on, and I will be in touch when this is ready to go out. But thank you.
Sounds good. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.